Welcome to the Clear Admit MBA Admissions Podcast. I'm Graham Richmond, and this is your wiretaps for Monday, October 5th, 2020. I'm joined by Alex Brown. Alex, how are things today?
Very good. Thank you, Graham.
So this, as it turns out, is the 65th episode of Wiretaps. And, you know, we've been doing these for, gosh, well, over a year. Obviously, we do one a week. And by my count, I believe we have profiled 195 MBA applicants in an effort to, you know, to share advice. It's almost like the case method at HBS where, you know, we're just taking real candidates, profiling them, and hopefully, you know, people are finding this useful. I also calculated it's about 40 hours of straight wiretaps podcasting. So you could lose like an entire work week if you chose to listen to every episode we've recorded. But I've really had a lot of fun doing this, and I'm glad that we do it every week. It's something I look forward to. Hopefully you feel the same way.
Yeah, no, it's absolutely fantastic. I didn't realize we'd been going at it for that long, Graham. That's how much I enjoy it.
So the other thing I wanted to do is it's October now. I'd love to have some guests on the show and for the wiretaps portion. And so I'm thinking I'm kind of two minds, and we can sort of talk this through off the air as well. But I was thinking we could either have someone come on who's been featured and wants to like set us straight on what we got wrong about their profile, or just provide, you know, more information, or even tell us how things turned out or something. Or we could just have people come on who we've never reviewed before, who want to have a kind of live on-air review, but we're going to make it happen one way or the other. I'm going to talk to our producer, Alex Kelly, who does a wonderful job with this podcast, and we'll make it happen. So everyone stay tuned. But Alex, are you, is that okay with you if we have some guests?
I think it'd be fantastic. I just hope we get a guest that actually likes what we're saying.
Yeah, that would be awkward. So what's the news this week? Because I know this is a really big week, especially there's something big happening tomorrow on Tuesday. So what have you got?
Yeah, I mean, we're really moving into the thick of round one season now. Harvard is releasing its round one interview invites on Tuesday, tomorrow, which is absolutely fantastic. And I know that Harvard, you know, does a pretty deep cut in terms of who it ultimately invites to interview, Graham. And therefore, there's quite a lot of anxiety. If you make that cut, that's absolutely fantastic. If you don't, still a long season ahead, lots of other great schools out there. But yeah, round one interview invites from Harvard. We also have London Business School and Fuqua, Duke Fuqua, releasing interview invites next week. Tepper has a round one application deadline actually yesterday on a Sunday, which I just find is completely bizarre why anyone would have a deadline on a Sunday. Darden, ISC, and Cornell Johnson also have round one deadlines this week.
So busy, busy week. I will say two things about HBS. The first is I think the interview invites are going to go live at around noon. And there are three things that you could hear about if you've applied in round one. The first would be an interview invitation. The second would be what they call kind of a hold, or I can't remember the word they use for it.
Yeah, we'll review you in round two.
Yeah, which is basically kind of like a wait list, but not really, because they haven't interviewed you yet. So they just kind of want to hold you for the second round and see what they've got. And then the third, obviously, is they have a very polite term for this, which is like release or something instead of rejection. But, you know, the good news about HBS is they have an early deadline and they get word out pretty quick. As you said, they're going to only interview a smaller portion of the pool. So everyone who's not making the cut will know tomorrow. And that's useful information to have because you can reconfigure or, you know, alter your plans and get more applications together either in late round one or round two. So why do you think they're doing just one batch this year? Because historically, they've done interview invitations in two, if not even three waves. Any ideas to like what might be going on there? Do you have any thoughts?
Well, I can repeat to you what you said to me just before we went on air. But I do think your point was very correct in terms of, you know, they're not traveling, they're hunkered down in the office looking at these files. So without half of your workload, you know, in terms of the travel aspect of recruitment, yeah, they've probably got more resources. They can actually make these decisions a little bit more swiftly. So I think it's great for the candidate because typically they've used a couple of dates to release round one interview invites. And, you know, that just creates a massive amount of additional anxiety. My hats go out off to Harvard Business School for their process. I think they have the cleanest, most efficient, and best process for the candidate in this regard.
Yeah, well, especially now that they're doing just one date. I think historically with the multiple dates, it was really stressful for people who didn't hear on that first date. And yeah, so, but anyway, yeah, so we'll see. Another theory that I had was, gee, I wonder if they have fewer applications in round one, but hard to know. I mean, most people are saying it's going to be a big year because of COVID and people wanting to kind of head off to school by the time there's perhaps a vaccine and escape the kind of recession that's been, you know, spurred by the pandemic. So we'll see. Again, I want to remind people we have an interview archive that has literally thousands of firsthand reports where candidates just leave information about the questions they had, what their interview was like, and obviously there are hundreds of HBS reports in there. So go check that out. It's free. I think you have to register on the site if you want to be able to sort and see all the reports for a given school. But again, registration's free. So check that out. Yeah, the only other thing I wanted to mention is we're now a couple weeks into having this data dashboard, the LiveWire data dashboard, and unsurprisingly, a lot of people have signed up to use it. I'm still having fun playing with it here and there because I got myself a free subscription. And yeah, just a lot of fun. And I encourage people to check that out, especially as you're waiting for like interview invitations or thinking about round two strategy or whether you need to add schools. The LiveWire data dashboard tool is great for sifting and sorting, you know, historical data on outcomes. So whether people are getting in or getting invites or waitlisted, you can really do it for any flavor, and you can, you know, plot GMAT scores, GREs, GPAs, and we have a ton of historical data in the system. So check it out. It's $20 for a month and it's $50 for a whole year. So please subscribe if you can. And that I guess we can get into the Wiretaps profiles. Although before we do that, Alex, I did want to just make a plea and ask folks who maybe don't have like a stellar profile to share on ApplyWire. I feel like we get a lot of people with great scores and great GPAs, and that may just reflect the fact that our audience on the margin is incredibly intelligent, and you know, we have a great audience. But I also think that there may be some of you out there who, you know, you maybe don't have like a 750 on the GMAT, or you have like a 680, you know, or whatever it might be. Please share, because remember, even though some of these schools have averages of like 710 or 720 or even higher, you know, half the people getting in are below that, right? So share on ApplyWire. We'll review you on the podcast and give you advice, because again, not everyone's got that 720 or whatever it might be. So Alex, anything else before we dive in and start talking about our candidates this week?
No, but I think that was a great segue into someone that doesn't have the stellar stats, but they're decent stats, right? So let's talk about this first candidate.
Yeah, so this is Wiretaps candidate number one. This person is applying to Duke, Michigan, and Darden. They want to start next fall, and they've been working in M&A. They have goals to kind of shift into consulting, and the companies they've listed are Bain, BCG, Deloitte, Ernst & Young, and McKinsey. Their GRE score is 322, GPA 3.02, and they have 4 years of work experience. They're located in the U.S., and they indicate that those 4 years are doing corporate M&A. They went to a top 30 undergraduate institution, studied economics, and they were a student athlete. And we actually both had some dialogue with this candidate. But Alex, I'll let you kind of start. And just what do you make of this candidate? I mean, you're right. Like, the numbers aren't off the charts here. So what do you make of it?
Yeah, I mean, obviously the biggest issue here with this candidate is that GPA, 3.02. So I'll throw it back to you, Graham. I mean, this is a student athlete. Does that make a difference? I guess what I'm getting at is when someone's in their undergraduate studies, if their motivations are not aligned with the academics, that obviously then impacts their overall academic performance. Obviously, they can go through some kind of evolution post undergrad. They get into a work situation, they do very well, and now they're much more motivated, and so on and so forth. What sort of recourse does a candidate like that have with a 3.02 GPA?
Yeah, it's tricky. I mean, I think on the one hand, being a student athlete has its challenges. I mean, as would doing anything in undergrad that requires a ton of extra time, like leading student council or, you know, whatever it might be. Although being a student athlete is actually particularly challenging because of the practice schedule. And, you know, he or she didn't specify like what sport, but it can be pretty grueling.
Right.
So I think what I would look for in this candidate is an optional essay that explains that, you know, they were really focused on their role as an athlete, and so the GPA, you know, went by the wayside. I'd love to know more.
Sorry to interrupt. Does their success as an athlete impact this equation? Like, if they were a star athlete versus someone who was maybe a substitute coming on every once in a while.
I think they didn't offer any detail that I saw in the comments. And so, but if they were thinking of like going pro, or if they were a captain of a team or something, clearly that then entails even more time and effort. So it does matter. I mean, I think schools know that there's a lot that goes into that. They also know that there's a lot of teamwork and leadership that can happen in athletics. And so I think it's understandable that the GPA may suffer. Obviously, with that said, there are a lot of student athletes applying to top schools who have great GPAs too and manage to kind of, quote, do it all. So this candidate will need to explain. But through our dialogue on the site, I was happy to hear that they've done MBA math, that they've taken the GRE twice. They ended up with a 322, and it's a really balanced score where they're above the 80th percentile in both math and verbal. So, you know, I think they'll have to write an optional essay, and, you know, they're looking at Darden, Ross, and Duke. So, you know, I think they might, I don't know. I don't know if you agree with this. I think they might want to cast like a wider net and have another school or two, just in case that GPA comes back to bite them. I think they've done what they can. Like, they've taken the test twice. They've got MBA math. They'll write an optional essay. But I worry that, you know, those are three really good schools. And so I'm just thinking, maybe, I don't know, maybe a UNC, or there could be other schools. I mentioned UNC because they have a concentration in consulting that's really popular with employers. And so I don't know, that's just a thought. I don't know. Do you agree? Do you think they need to add any schools here?
Yeah, I mean, obviously if they're applying to Duke, they could apply to UNC in terms of similar geographic sort of proximity and so on and so forth. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it would sort of help them cast a wider net. I would also point to their work experience in terms of merger and acquisitions and suggest that if that work experience turns out to be very substantial and it's backed up by really strong recommendations, because again, they've left school, now they're focused and motivated and they're doing very, very well, if that is the case, then that can help deflect a little bit of the issue away from the GPA, just a little bit, because again, GPA is looking at a different measure than actual work experience.
Sure.
But again, on the motivation side, I think it can help help a lot. Also, what, you know, if this person is, I don't think we really asked if they're involved in activities outside of work. In fact, they're coaching, right? So they're doing some coaching. I think they revealed that to us. And yeah, head coach of a nonprofit youth team, assistant coach at a local high school. I love that, right? So
yeah.
Getting involved, coaching is like mentoring, right? Mm-hmm. You're developing people. That's what we're looking for in business school admissions. You know, if you're going to be a leader in the long run, you're going to be developing talent along the way. So there's other stuff to look at here that could say, actually, this could be a really strong candidate despite this GPA. But they have to get over this GPA issue. No doubt about that, Graham.
Yeah, and I agree with you. The work experience is kind of, you know, what they want to do is tell a that was then, this is now kind of storyline.
Yeah.
Like where maybe they lack some maturity in college. You know, there were a number of circumstances contributing to that low GPA. But you want the recs and everything else to be, you know, wow, this person's really, you know, good head on their shoulders, very mature, knows what they want. So in any event, I think enough said here, but this is an interesting case because of the low GPA. And I would encourage them to add maybe a UNC, or, you know, they can obviously look at other schools too, but it just might make sense, or keep it in their back pocket for round two if they haven't, you know, if they haven't the time to get something in round one, or if the deadline's passed and stuff.
Yeah. I think UNC might actually be in another week, which is, one of the very later ones.
That's right, yeah. So I think enough said, let's move on and talk about Wiretap's candidate number two. So this is another ApplyWire entry, and this person is applying to Cornell, Dartmouth, HBS, UCLA, USC, and UVA Darden, and they want to start next fall. The pre-MBA career is in business development and sales. And post-MBA, they want to get into consulting, maybe tech. And for now, I think the short term is really consulting because they're talking about Accenture, Bain, BCG, and McKinsey as targets. GPA 3.57. This person has 7 years of work experience, although two of those years include a post-college stint in Spain teaching English. And then the last 5 years have been more of a traditional kind of business career in sales and business development. They're located in Boulder, Colorado. They want to end up either on the West Coast or in the Northeast. And lot to kind of get into because they gave us a ton of information in their kind of comments. And they talk about how they're planning to take the GMAT. They asked some specific questions. But before we get into their profile, Alex, I wanted to tell you that they said, I've been listening to this podcast series since early March, and I'm obsessed. It takes up the first 30 minutes of my Tuesday run.
Yeah.
So I don't know what you make of that.
But Graham, do you know how long his Tuesday run is? It's probably half the day. This is an ultra marathon run.
Yes, I noticed that too. 100K, or I can't remember what the person's focused on. Yeah, long distance stuff. But so as an experiment though, since this is the second or third person who's mentioned like running to the podcast, I actually went out for a run the other day and I said, you know what, I'm going to listen to our podcast. I never really listen to it, but I'll see, like maybe it's good to run to or something, you know? So I put it on and I had to turn it off after 5 minutes. No offense, Alex, but I just couldn't run to it. So I don't know how this person's doing it, but I guess if they're running 50K and things like that, maybe they need a variety of content. But yeah, what do you make of this candidate? Because it's kind of, a lot of work experience. They have like a sales background and they haven't taken the GMAT. They're expecting like, I think they said 680 to 700, willing to take it twice. They're doing HBX Core. Like, what do you make of this candidate? Because it's kind of it's not that traditional of a profile.
Not traditional. First generation college student, I think. And 3.57 GPA sounds pretty good to me. Love the running aspect, and we could probably dedicate an episode to athletes and so on and so forth. The previous profile was an athlete too, and I feel sorry for the next profile because they actually said they're a runner, but they only do half marathons, so it pales in comparison to this individual. But certainly, you know, the dedication, the grit and motivation, determination, these sorts of attributes that business schools do look for can be revealed from folks that do this kind of stuff, and especially these ultra runners. I mean, I did run a marathon once in my life, Graham, and I would never do it again. I couldn't do it again anyway, given my current physical state, but absolutely having gone through that experience once, it's never to be repeated. It's a very, very, yeah. Obviously, unless you prepare very well for it, which someone like this would. I really do like this candidate. Like, you know, their work experience sounds very much salesy, and, you know, there might be a bit of a stigma attached at very top tier schools in terms of sales, but sales, business development, you're owning a product, you're doing stuff with it and so on and so forth. There's a bit of a fine line there, and I think this person stepped over that line a little bit, which is very good. And hopefully, you know, they get some strong recs to back up the quality of their more recent experiences. That would be good. They've done HBS Core. They've got a good GPA, but they recognize with the type of undergraduate degree that they've done that getting this extra sort of quantitative focus is good. So I applaud that. Again, it shows another good attribute, which is self-awareness. They're going to take the GMAT. That's obviously going to have some impact on where they can ultimately end up. They say 680 to 700. That might sort of put them in that sort of top 16 category in terms of business schools. But if they could eke out a couple of, 20 extra points and get it into that sort of 720, 30, I mean, maybe you're talking, programs like Kellogg and stuff. And I was very surprised, actually, that this candidate didn't have Kellogg on their list. They, and talk a little bit about their target list, Graham. They have Harvard, because everyone aspires to Harvard, Stanford, Wharton, or whatever, or at least, you know, at the very top. But then they don't apply to another M7. The rest of the schools that they list, Cornell, Tuck, Anderson, Marshall and Darden, are in that sort of top 16, top 20 category. So I think, you know, if you're going to apply to Harvard, you're going to reach for the stars. You might as well reach just slightly lower down, i.e. Kellogg would be fantastic for this person, and then target your top 16 type programs, top 10, top 16, I should say. Your thoughts on that, Graham?
Yeah, no, I think you're right. There's like a gap in the school selection. I do feel like depending on where the GMAT lands, they might be at one end of the spectrum or the other with their schools. And so it'd be good to know. They're applying in round two, so they're still working on the test. There are several things I like. Liberal arts background with an international relations focus. Obviously not super quantitative, but it sounds like, you know, first generation of college, and they then went and lived in Spain for a couple years. And even within the U.S., they've lived in Utah as well as in D.C. So they've had like a really interesting background. And I actually wondered if they're Spanish speaking from going to Spain, or maybe even if they're first generation Hispanic, because that would be a feather in their cap too, because candidates, schools are on the lookout for first generation, for minorities. So this person didn't specify, right? But, and I too am impressed with the 50 to 100K, you know, racing they do. That just sounds insane. Although I do think, Alex, you might be able to run a marathon if we just put a pub at like every 10K or something. We might get you to do it. No, but in all seriousness, I do agree. There's like a gap they could put. If they could find a school in between, that would be useful. And yeah, I mean, I like this candidate. I think even with a 700, they would still have a good chance at some top schools because of this unique background and overseas experience and some of the other things in the mix. But yeah, a really interesting candidate, and I'm impressed they can run to the podcast.
Yeah, and I will say on the candidate's behalf, it's not 50 to 100K, Graham. It's 50 to 100 miles.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Which is it is incredible. We actually have a race here, not to go off on a bit of a tangent. It's called it's from Lizard Point to Land's End, so it's all along the coastal pass up and down. It's like 40 some miles. Wow. It's absolutely fantastic run. But I mean, this person would do that and go back again a little bit more. I mean, I do think ADCOM do like folks that do this kind of stuff, for the sort of grit and the determination and the perseverance, the dedication and various other things that it truly shows.
Yeah, agreed. So anyway, thanks to that person for tuning in and for listening to all the episodes, and hope you're enjoying your run as you listen to this episode. So Alex, let's move on and talk about our third candidate for this week. So this is Wiretap's candidate number 3. It's an MBA ApplyWire entry, and the person's applying to 5 schools, which include Cambridge, Duke, HEC, Paris, Oxford, and UVA Darden. And they want to start next fall. They've been working in wealth management, so kind of in finance, for about 5.5 years. And they want to pivot into nonprofit social impact. Specifically, as they state in their notes, they want to do renewable energy finance. GMAT score 720, GPA is 3.65, and they're in the US, but they would like to land in the UK or Europe. I believe in the dialogue that you had with them, they mentioned ideally London was the landing place that they were hoping for. What do you make of this candidate? Because I mean, they have this mix of US and international schools. They have kind of an unusual or, you know, pretty niche goals that are not necessarily, at least on the surface, directly related to what they're doing right now. And they want to go from the US to Europe, it seems. So, yeah, what do you make of this?
Yeah, I mean, it's very interesting. We had a candidate, I think we discussed last week, who had similar ambitions to leave the United States and pursue their career in Europe. And I believe they were an American citizen. So now we've seen a couple of similar folks with that. This must be a trend, right? Two people makes a trend rather than just one person. But no, I do think it's interesting that students are looking or future students are looking at a landscape of MBA programs beyond just the very best in the United States. This person asked a direct question, would be interested in hearing of schools worth pursuing outside of the ones listed here. So this person wants renewable, is looking in terms of their post-MBA ambition, finance in the sort of renewable energy sphere. You had some thoughts in terms of why they selected these programs, Graham, in terms of ASHA-SA and so on and so forth. But I would wonder, you know, they have good numbers. They should be targeting some of the very best, which they are, and ASHA-SA is a very good program. But why not a program like Wharton?
Yeah, I think, you know, there's some rhyme and reason to this school list, but it may be incomplete, and I'm glad they're asking for additional schools at this point. I think, you know, the reason that ASHA-SA Paris is on their list is because they have a certificate in finance and energy that I guess is you know, not super common, right? So that is a perfect fit with what this person wants to do. With that said, there are other programs too, like UT Austin McCombs has an energy finance concentration that's really well regarded. Both Duke, which is on their list, and Berkeley have these kind of concentrations in the energy sector. Wharton has a certificate in energy policy and management. And, you know, there are schools like LBS that are, you know, this is one of those things where you've got to look for schools that are strong in finance and have, you know, some activity going on with the energy sector. And, you know, LBS, if this person wants to be in London, like LBS would be a school to consider as well. There is quite a bit happening with renewables in both Europe and in America. So, you know, they could land, I mean, you know, there's all kinds of things happening with wind and batteries and things in Europe and in the US as well. So they could land in either of these markets. And so my view is, given their numbers, as you said, they should probably go to the best school they can get into that does have some opportunity to focus on the sector they're interested in. And so, you know, I would encourage them to, you know, look at some of these other schools that I've mentioned, whether it's McCombs or Berkeley or Wharton or LBS. And again, if they really want to be in the UK, I think they've got to have some UK schools on the list. I know they right now have Cambridge and Oxford. I also wondered, like, those are one-year offerings, and then everything else on the list is two, although HEC is actually halfway between the two. But I wondered, like, that's kind of a decision that usually folks make out of the gate so that they're not dipping their toe in both of those pools because it's a really different experience. And frankly, I don't know. I'm wondering about this person's past experience in private wealth management, which is, I believe, what they've been doing, right? Yeah. So how easy is it going to be to jump into renewable energy finance? On the one hand, you could say, oh, they have a finance background, so maybe it's easy. But if they think that it's going to require, you know, some time and energy, no pun intended, they'll need to probably do an internship. And I'm thinking 2-year program might be better. I don't know about you. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, no, I think that you make a very good point. And it would, obviously, with this candidate, we don't have a lot of detail in terms of what stimulated the goals and what they've done in terms of their career to date that's related to their goal focus. So so it would be good to learn more about that. But yeah, the 1-year experience, which can be absolutely fantastic for the right people, can be extremely intense and not really give you the breathing space to really explore as well as learn and go down a different path and so on and so forth. Yeah. So that might well be something to consider. I mean, I agree with you in terms of why LBS is not on this list if they want to go to the UK, or UK is one of the destinations. It's almost like they deliberately avoided LBS, which seems a little odd. It's a great finance program. We know that it's in an ideal location if you want to be in the UK. So
yeah.
So that was a little bit odd. I'd like to know a little bit more about their impact at work in terms of, you know, all we know is they've worked in wealth management, but you know, hopefully it gets backed up by really strong recs. And so on and so forth. But the numbers are great, Graham. Well, I mean, they're pretty decent anyway, right? 3.65 GPA, 720 on the GMAT, you might argue it's a little bit lower than the very top school's average, but it's still a fantastic GMAT score. So so I would imagine this candidate with great execution will have some good offers. They're also a runner, Graham. They're also a distance runner, only half marathons, though. So it seems like they're a bit of a sprinter in the context of our previous candidate.
Yeah, no, I would say... you know, the one thing you actually, I was just looking at my notes as you're talking, and I realized that I had a note, which was like, why energy, yeah. Right? So like, what's, and ideally, maybe there's some thread, like maybe some of the work they've been doing in wealth management has put them in touch with people who've invested in or involved in the energy sector and specifically renewables. Or, I mean, it'd be great if there was some kind of threat that they could weave, you know, from the past to the present that connects their work experience to their future goals. That'll make the admissions team a lot more comfortable with this candidate. And yeah, again, I think you're right. They tick the box academically. So I think no one looking at their file is going to say, oh, they can't survive the curriculum. I mean, these numbers are fine. They should be competitive at the top schools. And they have a range of, you know, admissions difficulty on this list as it is anyway. So, yeah, I just would love to know more about, you know, where the goal's coming from, and yeah, why, how did they build this list of schools? And, you know, again, I recognize it's tricky because they want to do energy finance and specifically renewable energy finance, which is different than like working just in the energy sector. Or working just on like Wall Street and finance. So it's, you know, they got to marry these two worlds. And not every school has a ton of offerings in this domain, but it's actually, I mean, it's a increasing area of interest. And so, you know, I feel like they'll find at any of these top programs, they could probably, you know, find a good place to land. So again, be good to know more. It sounds like the extracurriculars or the outside activities are okay. You know, but we don't have a ton of information on this, but anything else on this one? I really appreciate them sharing, and it's always cool to see different goals and you know, again, a candidate looking in both the US and Europe.
Yeah, no, absolutely fantastic. Yeah, I think we're done here, Graham.
Yeah, I agree. So we'll be back in 1 week's time. I did want to just make a plea. Please review and rate this podcast. It's been like weeks since we've had a review. And, you know, we're just always looking for feedback. So please tell everyone you know about this podcast and, you know, which we've said is the greatest MBA admissions podcast in the universe. I don't know. I think though somebody said it was the best one on earth, but, you know, we're hoping for more. So anyway, please review. And Alex, we'll see you in 1 week's time for another episode of Wirecast.
Brilliant. Thank you very much, Graham. Stay safe, everybody.